This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA meeting, February 9, 2009.
We're going to get started. Thank you, everybody. We're going to call this meeting to order at 5:34. As usual, we do a very brief introduction at the beginning just so that the new people in the room are familiar with the leadership. My name is Mario Guerrero, and I'm the Executive Vice President of the GPSA. Michelle Einfelder is to my left. She's the President of GPSA. And DeAndra Rose is to my right, and she's the Vice President of Operations. We're going to get started right away and open it up to the time for open forum. So this is a time where if there are any issues not related to the agenda, you can bring them up at this time. Are there any items for open forum?
Asha.
The meetings are sooner than the next time that we send out the GPSA info, but can you send it to the GPSA list? I think we all, as members, can send out, so if you have that electronically, if you can just send it out to that list.
Yeah, at assembly.cornell.edu.
If you can back on that a little bit, you can also go to the TCAT website and see the exact plans that they're talking about changing. Like where they're talking about cutting stuff and adding stuff, and also fill out a survey if you can't make the meeting and whatnot.
Is there anybody who would be able to or is interested in attending one of those meetings?
I'm planning to go tomorrow.
You're planning on going tomorrow? Great. Would you be able to come to our next business meeting or at least the next core meeting and just give us an update on what happens?
No problem.
And Amy, you too?
I'm going to Thursday night and Friday.
Okay. Amy, and what's your name?
I'm Ben Hefner.
Ben. Great. Thank you guys so much for doing that. Good.
Anything else for open forum? Yes. Okay.
Great.
I have
Thanks, Sylvia. Anything else? Yes, Preston.
The Faculty Senate is meeting this Wednesday, February 11th at 4:30 p.m. in Goldwyn Smith. And this should be an entertaining one because they are entertaining a motion to pass a resolution blocking the construction of Milstein Hall.
Oh, really?
So if you want to see a controversial Faculty Senate, that would be one to attend.
That would be a good one.
That's the new architectural building that is currently not on the construction pause. And so, yeah.
Okay. Anything else for open forum?
Mara.
Yes?
Can I just quickly, two plugs for the bar. There's a chocolate tasting this Thursday, late afternoon, early evening. It's one of the best programs that happens at the barn every year. There's a broad selection of chocolate, and so you can get your chocolate fixed in to get through a little CGIS. And then the second is, in collaboration with the vet school, we are doing speed dating at the vet school. Just a reminder of the ratio, the vet school is 70% women. same sex and cross-sex dating, speed dating at the same event. I think they're trying for that this time. So it's open to us, any and all. Last I knew, they needed every like the guys that you can think of, men, women, men dating with, yeah, you know, you've done Christ for this. Anyway, I would really encourage any and all of you to look forward to the end of the week's conference and the weekend of speed dating.
Thank you. Anything else for open forum? Okay, great. Seeing none, we're going to move to executive updates. Michelle.
Okay. You can hear me well enough. What do I have? One of the big announcements is that President Scorton and Vice President Susan Murphy are coming to our next assembly business meeting, which is 2 weeks from today, February 23rd, 5:30 to 7 in the Big Red Barn. Presumably, one of the topics of conversation will be the economic crisis and how that's affecting the university. But it is a time where you guys can bring up anything that is concerning you or anything that you want to address to the president and vice president. The other thing I would like to mention that's not on the agenda, but I received an email saying that the university will be going through a reaccreditation, and so they're looking for graduate students to serve on the committee. It is a long-term commitment, and so I have some more information. I didn't bring that tonight, but I have a whole email that has a lot of information in it. So if you are interested in just learning more, no commitment required, but I can send you that information over email. So please contact me if you're interested in that. Rebecca.
How long is long-term?
Possibly through 2010 or even 2011. But I say that with a little bit of hesitation because it could be that, you know, that doesn't have to necessarily be so. If they want graduate students, understanding that, you know, graduate students come and go and sometimes we have to leave on field research, maybe that's flexible. So, okay?
Is this open to just the core members or people in our field as well?
Let's open it up to people in your field. Anybody who's interested, if you hear of interest, email me. Okay? And can I see the internet?
Sure.
Are we moving on to something pretty soon?
No.
Okay. We have another point on the agenda after committee reports, but we'll be having a brief discussion on graduate student housing and kind of going off of Resolution 2, which we passed in November, but there are a couple folks from Campus Life who are there, who are here, so I just want to introduce them quickly, and then we'll go to the discussion after we do committee reports. But Joe Burke is sitting here, director in Campus Life. Barbara Mono, I don't remember your title. Thank you. And then Laura Davis. So they'll be engaging us in some discussion, or they're here to answer your questions when we get to that. But basically, we'll be talking about some of those new contracts that have become available for graduate student housing and, you know, how to get more graduate students interested or at least aware of what those new contracts are. Done?
Great. If you can move on to Deandra.
I just wanted to remind everyone very quickly that committee reports are due, so if you represent grads and professional students on committees, hopefully you received an email from me, and I'll see, there must be something wrong with my list because I skipped out to everyone, so I'll double check again.
All right.
Well, actually, if you didn't receive it, if you can email DeAndra directly, that way maybe she can forward you. Yeah. So she can forward the document directly to you. That way I can come to a resolution. Is that it, Jan? Okay, great. For my little update, I mentioned this at the last assembly meeting, and I wanted to mention it in this forum. We're going to be, or I'm going to be writing with the help of Nighthawk and Joanne Oport, a resolution on MLK, on recognizing the Martin Luther King Jr. Day and actually having that day off for any number of reasons that I won't go into today. But if anybody's interested, we actually have a draft and we'll be circulating amongst a little group and then bring it up during the next assembly meeting for a possible vote. Secondly, so email me directly. And my email's mg544. The next thing, for the Council of Representatives meeting in March, it's actually going to be shortened. We have, well, there's a presentation that we made accommodations for. The Office of Off-Campus Housing is having a speaker here, Mike Donner, Assistant Attorney General for the State of New York, I believe, and they're going to have this room prior to us, prior to our meeting. So they're going to end at 6. We're going to probably start around 6:10. It's definitely going to require a lot of support from all of you in terms of getting, helping to get the room set up to start the meeting. So it's going to definitely be shortened. And depending on the number of items that we have to cover, we might consider expanding it a little bit, but I'm going to try not to do that. Okay? Any questions or concern regarding that? Okay. We're going to move on to committee reports. If we can start with activities. Kate. Thanks, Kate. Are there any questions? Other questions for Kate? Okay. Before I move on to Brian, I just want to mention there's a clipboard going around. There's two lists. There's the sign-in sheet, and then there is the Council of Representatives sheet. I just want to make sure that your information is correct, so please sign in both. The one on top, you sign in fully, and on the one on the bottom, just initial that your information is correct. And if you're a core member and your information is not there, please write it down somewhere and let me know what field you're representing. Brian.
Field. We did start to get comments on it, which is good, but you notice that anything is missing, incorrect, the links are not right, I ask that you please email me or ccsa@cornell.edu so we can keep that correct at all times. So, I've given out Bernie and Jay for spending a lot of time and effort into making this. So, thank you. Two more things from advocacy. One is at the last assembly meeting, to the committee members, Bernie and Betsy passed a resolution on mental health, asking the administration to form a working group for to specifically look at graduate mental health and welfare. That resolution was passed, and we're now waiting for Vice President Susan Murphy's response. Similarly, they will be coming to CORE in April to do a presentation on what they've been doing as far as for graduate students in April. Finally, the last thing, we have a few upcoming events. First is our student advocacy town hall meeting. So I thank everyone who responded to our survey. I don't have those results. Someone on my committee has access to them, but she said it's going to look good. So we'll take everyone's input and hopefully get that together. The tentative date for the town hall meeting is set for March 26th. At 6 o'clock at the barn, and again, that is 10 minutes. So. And the next advocacy meeting will be on February 17th at 5:30, where basically we'll be planning the town hall meeting. So, again, if you have any advice for us, or if you want to help us in planning this, then I encourage you either to contact me or show up to our meeting. Thank you.
Any questions for Brian?
Brian, what's the date confirmed? Can you send out an email?
Yes, I will. For the town hall?
Yes.
Yes, I will. So, the survey that went out on the February 1st GPSA info, all I was told was that we had over 60 responses, and that most people seemed to like the date that we set, March 26th. So basically that survey was, would you be able to attend and if it was at this time? And we also listed issues concerning what issues should be brought up. Unfortunately, that I just know that we started to get a response. But at the meeting, we will have all the survey results.
Thanks, Brian. Charter review, Amy and Preston.
Okay, so we met this last week and had one of those, we're not leaving until we have at least the main ideas done type of meeting. And we have a great committee, and we've kind of come up with a few main changes that I wanted to highlight tonight. Because if you have concerns or issues about these changes, please let us know now. Because a lot of these require pretty dramatic reorganization of the charter. The purpose of GPSA is staying the same. We're just changing a few things. So the first thing is to be that we're going to create three documents. One being a shorter, more concise, easier to read charter, rather than getting bogged down in some of the initial stuff that's going on. The other is going to be a set of bylaws, which is going to be a much more detailed document that's going to be easier to change than the charter. And we're also going to propose that it's reviewed every summer when the new exec comes in. We're working on where that should be and whose responsibility that should be. The other one is to have a third document, which is a funding policy type document. What the name is, so that instead of the charter being the charter and then these couple of tendencies, that you know that I'm looking for the funding guidelines for GPSA and the details of such. Boom, here I go to this document. So what we're trying to do is just make things more detailed and clear where they need to be and more concise where they need to be. The other thing is everybody is inherently confused about assembly and core. So what we are proposing, now if you have problems with this, please let us know, okay? This is probably one of the larger things, and I need to thank Carly for this suggestion. is that we actually changed the name of GPSA to the Graduate and Professional Students Association, and under that we have the assembly portion and we have the core portion, so that there's not this confusion in the charter and amongst people of, oh, does that mean the core, or does that mean the entire assembly and core, et cetera, et cetera. So please let us know if you have any concerns about that. The other thing is we're trying to find a new name for the Funding Policy Committee to make it much more distinctive from the FC Finance Commission. And the initial one we have on the table is the Appropriations Policy Committee. Now, this is the best one we could come up with, and there was pretty much universal agreement that it wasn't ideal, but it was better than what was there. Just so that there's some clarity in what the kind of byline side of things does and what the Finance Commission side of things does, because people tend to right now confuse the two. The other thing is that you are going to be getting a large document before the next assembly meeting. Our goal is to have it done by the end of the month assembly meeting. We have found in our charter that legally we can present it at the March core meeting and vote on it at the March assembly meeting. I promise you this is in our charter. But we would really like to get this out as soon as possible. And you're going to be getting PDFs, and I really cannot emphasize enough that to make these meetings go more efficient, that you read them and try and provide corrections and suggestions to us as soon as possible. Kristen and I now, after our committee has given some suggestions, are going through and reorganizing things and putting stuff together. And this is going to take a lot of time, so we really like to have those things. But other than that, any questions for us?
Just before, though, just realize that, you know, right today is not meant for like an exhaustive discussion about these issues. If you have brief questions, we'll take those, but it's going to be presented and you're going to get a document. So,
if we don't have a ton of time in the agenda to review it, legally, by the charter, it means we only have to present it at that meeting and then do that. Our goal is to actually have it start at the meeting in 2 weeks, which is going to be a whole task. But because Kristen and I have kind of devised reorganizing it right now. But we really want people to send suggestions to us earlier. Because when we change one thing, it means we have to change definitions throughout documents. Even splitting this up, if certain stuff doesn't get passed, we have to write stuff into this resolution to put caveats. If something doesn't pass, it reverts back to this, and things like that. So if you have feedback, especially negative feedback, send this to us so we can try to address it early.
I just have a question about the process. Is it sort of all or nothing? You sort of said caveats and if this passes or not. How do we consider parts?
So what we'll do is we'll present a resolution and you can pass portions of the resolution. We're actually going to probably propose that it be passed as an entirety because this is such a dramatic change and reorganization that if it doesn't pass as an entire package, with modifications that people see necessary, it's not going to make sense. And that's part of the problem with the current charter, is that it's been hodgepodge for so many years that it doesn't necessarily make sense. And the charter committee people can tell you, because we've read through this so many times in the past few weeks, that every time you read through it, you get more frustrated about how disorganized some of the stuff is. So...
Okay, probably the last question.
How many days before the core meeting will you, there will be a couple of days to read through it to get back to you?
Well, we're trying to get it to the assembly meeting. Realistically, we won't be able to get it out for the weekend before the assembly meeting at the end of the month. And then it'll have the core meeting, and then it'll have the assembly meeting. Because this is such a dramatic change that we really want to allow as much time as possible. and we don't want to delay it to the April meeting, April Assembly meeting, just because of the timing and the transition and such to the new Assembly. So keep that in mind as well.
And like I mentioned, if we need to extend the core meeting, we'll do that, but we can have a conversation about that afterwards. Any other questions, you can email Amy or you can question, and you know, when you get the document, please review it. We're going to move on to, actually, I think Nighthawk and Yearn are going to present together.
Yes, I'd like to say a few. I'm going to spend the first minute of this explaining a little bit about what the GPSA-FC is. It's the funding arm of the one of the two funding arms of the Graduate Student Assembly. So I'm going to spend 1 minute talking about that. Then we're going to have a skit led by Yearn, and then we're going to have a discussion afterwards. So what we're doing with the GPSA-FC, right now we are trying to rewrite the entire bylaws. We're not even adding anything in. The bylaws is in the trash can right now. Yearn and I have been working along with the Finance Commission and the Funding Policy Committee to review the bylaws. So we're trying to put together a whole new set of bylaws. There's very few substantive changes, but there is one very important substantive change that we would like to talk about this evening. And so that's what we're going to spend the entire evening talking about.
Yes.
I don't know about the entire evening. In fact, I'm timing it.
So there are, you all pay your student activity fee, and $25, roughly, of any student fee go to the GPSAFC. And the GPSAFC's role is to disseminate those $25 to student groups. And these student groups have to be registered with the student activities office, and then they make annual budgets, and they submit their budget to say what they want to do.
Actually, this one's on. I don't know that was on.
Okay. Then they present the budget to the, they present an annual budget to the Finance Commission, and the Finance Commission says, yeah, we think this is a good idea, we're going to give them money. Okay. Now, the current system works like this. Let's say this was the whole amount of money that we have to give out. Okay. There are four categories. You can be a group, I mean, you register. Now, you can have a program. You can get a speaker. You can get a speaker to come, and that guy is going to give a presentation, give a talk, and people are going to ask questions. And naturally, everyone on this campus will be interested in what this guy has to say. So one of the criteria to give funding is that this should appeal to the entire graduate community. Clearly, that's not quite realistic. But this is one thing. You can make a program. The other thing you can do is you can say, I really like playing football. Whatever you think football is, you can have a football club. You can have a football club, and you can say, look, I want to play football. Please give me money for playing football. You get some other people who also like playing football, you can find a group, you're going to get money to play football. Whichever league you want to play. I mean, if you can soccer, you play. Then you could say, I would like to have a publication. I read like poetry. I want people to submit to my journal. That doesn't exist yet, but I'm going to have a journal. And then you can apply for money, and you get money for publication. Yeah, so this is the third part. And then they say, okay, look, now I have a group. I mean, really, I want some cohesion in the group, so I'm going to have some money, which, you know, just to do group activities, that's called social funding. There are four parts of that. And the way it currently is, if you are an organization that does program things, you cannot also do program things. You can only do program. If you want to do a publication, you can only do a publication. You cannot do these other things. I mean, you're still a group, right? You still want to have social activities going on, so you can apply for social. But only one of those three. Okay. The problem with this, as it currently is that there are a number of groups which really cater rather only to their own department. So what we're currently funding sort of is like you know, a colloquium series, and people say, okay, we have speakers come in, and these people talk to us about this thing, post one to our department, we say, okay, we're going to give you some money. But it isn't really clarified how much that should be, etc. I mean, there are caps on all these things, but it's not, it doesn't completely agree with what's written in the bylaws. And so those are two aspects, the fact that you can only apply for one of these things, and the fact that there are a large number of events and groups which really cater rather to a smaller sub-portion of the graduate community. So what we propose to do is the following. Instead of having profit. There will be the money, right? And right now there is only one type of organization. So those are the students. And you can form organizations, but there's three different. You register with the student activities office, and you can apply for money out of those three funds. Now I need my volunteer. So what we want to do is we want to have student organizations. So it could be interest organizations. Okay, will you come up? So there could be organizations with shared interests, and so NITOP is representing one of those.
Extracurricular activities.
Now, let's say there's another type of group, which is more geared towards a specific department, field of study, whatever it is, right? Some sort of unit that's shared activities. We're going to call those field groups. Right? Now, notice, before this was all one. Now we've created two distinctions. There are interest groups, and there are field groups. And we still have the same amount of money to distribute. Okay. So what are we going to do with this money? Okay, well, we're going to have some fun. We're going to have programs. We're going to have similar support. We're going to have social. We're going to have publications. We're going to have and we're going to have something which is called. We're going to have social, and we have something which is called team. Okay. And now let's say an iCloud comes to me and says, so what do you want to do with your, what organizations are you representing?
Well, I'm representing the football club, some dance or dance troupe, and
you want to get a speaker,
But you do have some group activities.
We do.
Right. Okay, so you're going to get some
issues. Yeah. Welcome back.
Yes. Yeah.
For our new members.
Okay. Do you represent the youth?
No.
No. Right. Well, then you're not going to get some issues. Okay. Right. So
this was now an interest organization. Okay. Notice one crucial, what would not be possible under the current funding system in what I just did? Yes. They could only get one of those three and then push. Now, what we propose to do is to take this distinction away. You could, if you have a convincing proposal to do an event, then you can get funding somehow. Now let's see what happens for a field organization. Which field do you represent?
The organization is Cornell Planner.
So you represent that? Well, then let me give you a fixed amount of money. Because, I mean, how many people are there?
About 40.
Okay, so there are 40 people. I kept that with the DGM. There are 40 people. I'm going to give you, say, $300. Okay, you do with this whatever you think is right. I mean, you represent those people, you should do something that benefits them. Now, do you think you also want to do, do you want to do programming?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to give you some money for that. Software?
Intramural.
Yeah. Then a publication, you know, publication maybe.
Yeah.
You know, publication. But here you're going to do some social events.
Definitely.
Okay, you get some social. So this would be then the end of this. Notice again the distinction, this part of money doesn't exist right. I could not give money to an organization that just says, people come to me who are all in my field, and we do something which is rather of interest only to the field. And really, I mean, give us some money, right? I mean, we pay $25 each. Like, we should get some money to do something with them. I say, no, look, I mean, our rules, I follow the bylaws, right? The bylaws say you have to appeal to the whole graduate committee. I cannot give you any money. If we change this, and if we introduce the field category, we would be able to do that. But notice again, then
There's a small feature. I asked how many students there are.
The proposal is to make the amount of money that you would give to those organizations depending on the size of that field.
And so that would somehow start at 250 or so, maybe go up to 1,000 or 1,400 or something like that. So that those numbers are changed. But notice this category doesn't exist right now, and this is one of the major things we suggest to introduce. And and so, but notice again, this does not mean that this organization could not apply for funds from these other parts. So if, you know, let's say the planning organization wants to bring in the big speaker which tells something about development in Africa or something, which will interest not only people in planning, but also in Africana studies, et cetera. They could do this. This would be an event that would appeal to the whole community, or at least a bigger subset of the community, and they would get money for that.
You're in, just so you know, you have 5 minutes left.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I should have 8 minutes.
You have about 5 minutes. You have about 5 minutes left.
Okay. So I should start to get into questions. One feature that my company would like to mention,
sure,
is about some other positive aspects of the field funding.
Okay, that's about the field funding. If you don't have a green placard in front of you right now, you have a blue placard. That blue placard has a word on it. Those things are fields. So we're talking about the Graduate Student Association when we're talking about fields. So can you just raise your hand so I can get an idea of people know what I'm talking about? Does your field have some sort of Graduate Student Association? Okay. So in the interest of time, you struck me afterwards, but it seems that most of you understand what I'm talking about. So we're talking about organizations that represent solely the academic and social interest of people within that field. So I'm in natural resources. And so the Natural Resource Graduate Student Association, that's what we're talking about, because they do activities that are for natural resource students. And as Yuan said, right now, it's iffy whether we're violating the bylaws by giving these organizations money for very legitimate events that we think, but they really appeal to people in a particular department. Another thing about this new amendment that we're trying to implement is that we will give you this specified amount of funding. And remember, if we don't give you this specified amount of funding, you can still apply, not for field funding, but for these other things, these other programs, support, publication, social, and things like those other costs. But if we give you this amount of field funding, your field organization needs to have a seat filled on this body. On the council representative, you would have to have a seat present. Let me read you some statistics here. This year, more than any other year in the memorable past, this body has been trying to, I think, make some effort to recruit people to be on the board. We're taking efforts to make sure that organizations are represented. As of pre-November of last year, 2008, 35.1% of the seats on this body were filled. That means that the other 64.9% of the seats were not represented. That's 34 out of 97 of all the total fields had anyone represented field on this body. There's 18 fields of humanities, one of them had a representative as of November. That means that we are a representative body that is not being represented of our constituency. I think this is a way by saying, hey, look, there's a little extra money. We have money that we'd be willing to give you. We're giving money to a lot of you anyway. But this is a way to say, hey, here's some extra money. Figure out what social programming, what academic programming you want to do. But also please get involved and share your interest with the graduate student body, this government at large, so that we can be truly representative of our constituency. Question.
So just the tax from the funding fund or the field fund?
That the field money would be the only money that's tied to having the representative.
When you apply for the field, do you submit an annual budget with that, and then can you apply in the same annual budget for both your field funding and?
You can apply for everything in the same budget. It's great, right? The executive vice president has the power, if a representative has unexcused, two unexcused, executive unexcused absences under the charter, to remove the person from that seat. And so if a person is removed from a seat by the executive vice president for not attending for two unexcused absences, then that organization wouldn't get the funding. The funding would be with them.
I think that would have to be part of the proposal, that not only currently as executive vice president, I can recommend that person be removed, but it doesn't say that that's tied to funding. So this bylaw would have to include some language that says that,
so
I believe.
What the idea is that the FP bylaw should not actually deal with how people are removed from the board. It should just be that if the executive vice president tells the FP that this organization has no representation, they're actually going to be I think we have maybe have time for one more question, and then please be yelling to me afterward, or I'll give you our email addresses now. You can correspond with us, because this is a really important issue, and this is coming up on the next assembly meeting in 2 weeks, the business meeting. We're going to be proposing our new bylaws, along with the charter, which should be a best meeting. DCE6, and Yun is JNK24. So please email us if you have the answer. Take one last question.
Point of historical information, actually, the reason that the charter indicated it, that it had to be open to everyone, was an effort to institutionalize cross-state pollination, if you will, because of the historical fact and graphic study of Cornell is very silo-based and people don't get out of their field. And so that would be my point of information as you're considering changing the design.
Currently, we do fund many, many graduate student associations for field projects. But we fund them, and so they have a symposium and supposedly open to everyone, and 98.6% of their attendance, even though it's open to everyone from the department. We think this is a more viable way to allow good programming to continue.
This is not black and white, because you can still apply to all those other funding points. So, and the total amount of field funding would be on the order of maybe 20 to 25% of the annual budget. Probably even less than that. So it would just be something that would be additional, and it would not be meant to replace all the other things. All jobs that currently exist will continue to get funding. All graduate student organizations that currently exist but are not recognized as such would get a little more funding, and hopefully we would get a little more participation. And please do send us a call.
Thank you, Yuan. Thank you, Nighthawk. I apologize for maybe it seems that we're not giving this enough time, but this will be brought up at the assembly, discussed ad nauseum, so please email questions, and I apologize, but we have a really tight agenda. We're going to move on to graduate housing updates. Yes.
The student assembly passed a resolution 2 weeks ago, 1.5 weeks ago, which said that there was a moratorium on the creation of new student groups. This does not apply to graduate students. It's not clear in this respect. And the student activities office has told them that they should try to make this clear, which has not made it into the resolution. But I have confirmed with Catherine Holmes that graduate groups which want to form will still be able to register, and at the next assembly meeting we'll probably have a resolution to that effect. But please, if people in your field are confused, if people want to form an organization, they can still do that. They should not think that they cannot.
Thank you,
Yuan.
Hold business, graduate housing.
Okay, but thank you, because that was a good point to make. I want to reintroduce the folks from Campus Life who have come to visit us today. And they're here to answer any of your questions. So just to recap, Resolution 2, which was passed in November, we talked about new contracts to be available at Hasbrook. And so I will let them just give a couple minutes update on that, the new contracts that are available, and some other some other things that we graduate students need to be aware of. I won't somewhat conflicts of interest, but given economic times, we have to be cognizant of the fact that no bed is going to go vacant next year. So if a graduate student housing or residence does not have a graduate student in it, there is the possibility that undergrads will be there, despite all efforts that GPSA has made to try to curtail that. So what we're trying to do, again, to try to curtail that, is just advertise graduate student housing and try to get graduate and professional students into those places. So, Joe, would you like to recap what the new contracts are?
Sure. Let me thank you for having me. And to say that, I think what we've been trying to do is work closely with the GPSA and the graduate school to try to keep the graduate areas housing just for graduate students only. But we are up against some economic and financial crises. Everybody is okay with that. So thanks to Barb's good work. And actually, you know, we're here too to ask for your help and spread the word, to try to help us get the word out about graduate housing and getting people in there. But thanks to Barb's good work, some changes have been made with contracts up in the Hattiesburg community that would allow single graduate students to go into a two-bedroom. The person could have notice in the bedroom, but also a study within. Or two unrelated graduate students could contract up the Hattiesburg and be in one of the two-bedroom. Hoping that maybe this is the after the speed dating crisis, we still show things. We are in a situation where obviously people are losing their jobs and getting laid off. And what our obligation is to try to get jobs. Some of us are on.
So, again, what we're trying to do is come up with some different contract languages, different contract up at Hattiesburg. And really, again, what we're doing is we're looking for your help to help us spread the word about the new contracts and possibilities that Hattiesburg can encourage graduate students to become a part of the community up there. An email was sent out to the community on Friday to the members of the Hattiesburg community and telling them about this and encouraging them also. Barb has more details about the numbers and that type of thing, but I think that's basically where we're at. And if you have questions, I think we can try to answer those questions. I'll try to do it without the house.
What kind of costs are graduate students looking at for the on-campus housing? Because I know when I was came here and comparing campus housing to off-campus housing, it was actually more affordable for me to live off-campus.
What we're trying to do is limit it really a very small percentage of the housing industry. And on a two-bedroom apartment over at Hattiesburg, that rent had a zero increase for the coming year.
So what does that mean?
$100 a month for a two-bedroom apartment.
Not per apartment.
And what kind of extra costs, like, is the university now then charging you for things like phone and cable and internet and all that stuff, or is that all included in that?
It varies by the unit, so actually, utilities are included in that.
Okay.
So
that's basically
that's a big one, but you know, parking units you've got to pay for that, and then internet.
Okay. Question back here.
Nick.
Yeah. I guess my question is, so from what I understand, the Hattiesburg is designed for benefiting families, and I know a lot of people are very passionate about making sure that families don't have a place to go, but I'm wondering if all the families that want a space there, or if you can connect to all the families that want a space, will be able to find a space there, and you're not worried that, I guess, the option of having single rooms you're sharing with families is very important.
Right. Over the years, when we did the 10-year history on that Hattiesburg property and all of our new facilities, and the demand for the family isn't as great as the number of apartments that we have available.
Any other? Hold on, Amy. Wait, so are there any other questions?
Okay.
Okay, Amy.
I,
The other question I have is, are students that who are normally turned away from Maplewood going to automatically be given preference for like a few unrelated students in Hasbrook, so that, or have the option of choosing that, say, new students who are coming in, things like that, because I know that would be a much more appealing option than sharing an apartment with 300 people.
What we're seeing is, we already went live with our application process, and we are seeing that some students are requesting the two bedroom related. Right now, we have actually 109 signed contracts for the coming year. So, good, and we have 70 inquiries about students unrelated. Now, I haven't been able to look at the data as to how many of those are currently with residents requesting, but we have also that up to all residents, whether they're 30 or signed.
And then the other question I had as well is, are you going to open that up then to undergraduate students who have families before you open it up to single undergraduate students?
Yes. And we usually place the non-traditional undergraduate in Hasbrook if they have a family.
Okay. Because I know some undergraduates who have children have had problems getting into Hasbrook, or because they weren't termed graduate students. So I'd rather see them placed in Hasbrook before single undergraduates.
I mean, our goal here really is to have that That's really what we're all working towards. Yeah.
I think Kieran had a question.
I think I asked the same question so that the concern was, let's say we open, as we have done, it's open to single unrelated graduate students. Will this create such a high demand that families are driven out? And I think that, if I remember correctly, it's not my addition to this, there 4 or 5 years ago when I came here, I think even graduate unrelated students were allowed to have to check a record.
6 years ago.
Yeah.
The reason was that exactly as Amy said, the idea of two unrelated people living in Hasbrook was more attractive than the Maplewood single students, and it was also less expensive. I haven't looked at the rates this year. I don't know if that's true, but in other words, you could get a one-bedroom sharing with one other person in Hasbrook for much less than one-bedroom sharing with three other people in Maplewood. And so there was a sort of a demand or a market rate issue between the two living areas. So I think the decision mostly was made on economic basis, and then looking at inviting postdocs and visiting scholars to, as they were a much more similar community base, to live with graduate student families in Hasbrook. With that strategy, it never got up to 100% occupancy, which is now what we're looking at. And so, again, this was where, coming back to the idea, there was a demand at that point when they did continuing occupancy at Maplewood. We'd actually have to have like 6 people on board because we'd actually have to time date stamp the applications for single students who wanted to move to Hasbrook and then process them in that order. It was that competitive. We had way more demand from single students than we had at that point. But I don't know what they're seeing this year or if it will indeed, as with any change, it sometimes takes a while for it to ramp up. The grad school is very interested also in supporting campus life. We drafted a postcard that I was supposed to bring to you all tonight to show you what our color pictures wrote. So instead, I will be emailing the PDF out on grad and the DPFA listserv tomorrow. You guys feel free to disseminate that. We're also sending it out a variety of other lists across campus from the DPS to the DFA. Graduate student advocates so that we can make sure that we get the law school, the business school, and the vet school, as well as the graduate and professional population within the grad school. We think it's an opportunity to help create or reinforce a very important community for graduate students to be made single for students.
Okay. Okay, so we do have a full agenda. We're going to move on. But I just wanted to say a couple things just to sum this up. I hear that there is concern that we're trying to trump families, and that is not at all what we're trying to do. But what happened this year was there was something like 60 vacancies at Hasbrook, roughly, and there were roughly 140 single graduate or professional students turned away from campus housing because there were no contracts suitable for them to live in a Hasbrook residence. That made things very uncomfortable at a Board of Trustees meeting when a board member said, why are undergraduates living in modified lounges when there are 60 beds vacant at Hasbrook? We don't want that to come up again at a Board of Trustees meeting. We want to avoid that. So we want to be able, and I thank Campus Life for making these new contracts, because now if something like that comes up again at the Board of Trustees meeting, then we can say, we have shown that there is graduate student demand for on-campus housing. There are no vacancies. That's the goal, okay? So we're not trying to trump families. We're just trying to fill vacancies. And we probably should move on.
With that, we're going to move on. But as usual, if there are questions, concerns, you can probably contact Michelle or these folks behind me directly. Barb, what's your email?
BR20.
And Joe.
And Joe, what's your email?
JAB346.
Thank you once again. We're going to go ahead and move on, and I want to openly apologize to Beth. We were supposed to start a little bit earlier, but Beth from Cornell Information Technologies, if you can go ahead and take the floor. Oh, wrong one.
Why did we get set up? I'm Greg Vincenzi. I'm a project manager within CIT. I'll present and then get set up with the projector. I think I'm loud enough. It's not in the microphone, right? I don't know how to make that deal with that. First of all, while we're getting set up, how many of you have the two-page handout that should be provided? Several different sub-projects that are underway within CIT. many students already, or most students, will forward or do forward their mail someplace else besides Cornell.edu. We have no way of knowing where you read your email, but it seems that most students arrive at campus with an email account. They get another account through Cornell, and they continue to use whatever account they have when they get here. As I mentioned earlier, the systems that we provide to you today are essentially not very contemporary. We have a 300 megabyte storage and a quota, while the vendor services have an order of magnitude more. We don't have some features that students we think need, like the calendar function. And it's difficult for you to integrate your portable device or your intelligent phone with the services that we provide today. That's kind of a broad brush about the student view, we think. And on the faculty and staff side, there, I guess one of the questions is, do any of you use Oracle Calendar as part of your staff? That is the staff and calendar tool. It's not integrated with email. It's fairly old style, if you will, to have an email and calendar system that are not unified and not integrated. One of the major reasons that we're moving to Exchange is to have that integrated functionality. And then, in addition, many units on campus already have their own Exchange deployment within their department or within their college, if you will. And many, many other units are coming to us and asking us to deploy Exchange. Yes?
I just do the same way that I use the current calendaring system. It's the same way my advisor is available to me. Is that something that's still possible in the new Exchange system?
Do you have access to Oracle Calendar today?
Yes.
Yes. Then we'll see a bit later in the slide that we are intending to replace your capability in that sense with an Exchange functionality that lets you do that same thing. What we're not prepared to do is to offer an Exchange account to every graduate student yet. So we're trying to figure out a process where your department can ask for that and we figure out how to make that happen. But in the functionality sense, the short answer is yes.
So why not offer it to every graduate student to start off with?
The reason is cost, to be quite candid. It's expensive for us to do that. That may develop over time. Part of what we have to work out is how these things are cost effective.
And so if we want access to this Exchange system, are we going to have to go through the Microsoft server instead of the Google server?
Let me get into it a little bit more, and I think that I can answer part of your questions. So if you can turn to the next slide, this has developed for quite a while. This isn't something that just magically got dictated or had to eat it. But back, the first one was begun in 2007, where there was a task force for faculty and staff. There was a cross-representative group that was chartered by the vice president of CIT, a woman named Paula McClure, to look at this. There were Microsoft fans and Microsoft opponents, if you will, on that body. And they came back and said, for these requirements, for number one was integrated mail and calendar, the only viable solution that exists in the market today is Microsoft Exchange. And that, I think, was somewhat reluctantly arrived at by some folks who are not Microsoft fans, but you probably know some. So there was a similar task force on the student side that was chartered in the beginning of January of 2008. I was on that team. I don't recognize any faces here, but we sought student input, and we had eight or nine who were representatives. I don't remember. So we didn't have input. We had a survey that went out to 2,000 undergrad and 2,000 graduates in March, April of 08. Did anybody receive that here? Okay, that said, part of this. So we learned, or we try to get an understanding of how people really use these tools. And these advisory boards each made recommendations that were accepted by the director of systems and operations, Steve is the director of IT security, Jim Lamar is the director of academic and technology services. I know the acronym, but not the whole thing. I'm a project manager on two of the sub-projects. There's an overall project manager named Chris Lyons, who's looking after all of Ensemble, our contact information we have at the end. And then finally, each project has advisory groups. If you're not on the advisory groups of the student project and you'd like to have an opportunity to see some early information, please send me a message a bit later and I'll give you my contact information. Okay. So we'll get into some detail about what this means. And part of what I need to acknowledge to you is that the contracts with Google and the contracts with Microsoft are not yet signed. I'm afraid that we've been at 90% now for a couple of months, and I've given up trying to predict when we'll have closure. But we are working in parallel on the technical development, and what you see here is really information, but the reason why we're not issuing any kind of a press release or more formal announcement is quite frankly because the contracts are not yet signed. Okay, so we're trying to walk that line. We have a contractual obligation, for example, with Google, that any public announcement or press release is reviewed by them and vice versa. So I'm trying to share things with you, but please understand that until they're signed, they're not signed. Okay? And things may still fall through. These accounts are provided to you free of charge. They are different than what you would have today if you have a Google account. Some things are the same, and I'm not detailed enough to give you a litany of all the content, but there are some advantages that you have because your identity will remain NetID at Cornell.edu, regardless of one or both of these accounts. One thing that I don't think we have a slide for, but I'll emphasize to you is that this is a conscious decision to offer both accounts, both services. Some schools have offered one or the other, and we're actually following what Drexel, University of Virginia, and Indiana have done to name a few, offer both. I'll get into a slide that talks about how they're different, how they're similar, but there are advantages we think to you to have the choice of which one you want to use, and for us to have them compete with each other for our business essentially. These are free, they're provided to you without advertising. When you graduate, when you do an update in our provisioning, where we tell them that a NetID is no longer type student and now is type alumni, their business model is to turn advertising on. And they conceptually will make more money from their advertising because they have Cornell graduate eyes looking at their product. I don't believe, or I'm fairly sure that neither of them have actually turned the ads on yet. But that is the business model. That's how this thing hangs together. Among the features that we believe you're interested in from the survey that we did, just to name a few, is to have a calendar function. Today, you don't get any kind of a calendar function. This is something that we're going to offer initially to you as is, but down the road, if it's something that students are interested in, for example, and this is not a literal, it's going to happen, but the university could make it easy for you to bring down semester and the schedule is, you can have that in one unified email and calendar spot. You could have other schools have done things where you can pull in your class schedule. You know, so these are simple things in a way that we don't have that function or that capability for you today. Yeah.
Does Cornell have a privacy policy in place as far as, this is pretty specifically targeted advertising.
That is why, quite frankly, the contracts are not signed. Our attorneys are, I have to be careful, but let me answer your question and say, that's why they're not signed. Okay, so
Will people have the option to opt out if they don't want Google or Microsoft to have all their emails?
Yes. And what we're developing is how we do all that, and that's the kind of input that would be useful to come from folks like yourself. Okay. So, just to go on, the other questions that exist are collaboration things where you could work on a class or a course. You have discussion in different groups of, so what if I'm in a class and they all want to use Google, or I'm in a different class and they want to use Microsoft? You will have both capabilities, and the idea is down the road you'll be able to figure out which is best for you, and I'll talk to you in a minute, and not have to choose under your tab. I think as I've said a few times now, your NetID or your email address will remain unchanged. We'll still have that same convention. And from a project perspective, my critical deadline for in my management side is that when new students who come into the university with their deposit that I understand is accepted or can be accepted for the first time this year, April 1st, for the fall semester, that's when I need to have all the structure in place. I'm doing my best to make these accounts available to you before that or after that, but my most critical deadline is those new students when they come in so they get provisioned on the new accounts. Next slide, please. Okay, this is a summary of what the accounts or what the services do. And the only example that I'd like to point out to you is to ask how many of you have used Google Docs? Okay, and I would expect that most of you. If you've ever saved a file there, that's the Word file, and I think most of you are ubiquitous Microsoft Office users, right, Word or PowerPoint. If you have a Word file that, and this is not an advertising case, this is really an example. If you have a Word file that has things like headings and tabs, and you collaborate within Google Docs and you bring it back, there's an excellent chance that all that formatting will chalk up pretty dramatically. Okay, and the reason is when you save stuff in Google, it's first converted into a Google Doc format, right? Now Microsoft is coming to this game a little late, and they're a little bit more competitive or a little bit more aggressive. They have a product called SkyDrive, I think. But I'm trying to read this up here close. But their SkyDrive is a similar function, but it is file agnostic. You can save Google Docs, you can save Microsoft, you can save OpenOffice. It goes in and it comes out the exact same way. It's got some other issues with it, but that's a simple example where the idea is off the boat and you can choose which one you like to use. And as you can see from the storage, they're much more contemporary than we offer you today. So we are a bit further along in our branding for the Cornell testing or for the Cornell brand for the Google Apps testing account. Yes. Yes.
Actually, I'm sorry. Do you mind if we hold our questions to the end? We're really tight with time, and so I just want to make sure that he covers everything, and then if you have questions, we can cover it.
Okay. This is shaded out with just a test account name, but that's the branding. It looks just like what you're used to now. Next slide. One more question. How many of you have used Outlook in your past? Okay. That's expected as well. Exchange Lab is essentially Outlook Online. It's an Outlook web access. So those things that you're used to, it's not as cutesy to me as Google is. It doesn't have all the gadget stuff, but it is an office-type product, and they're coming up the learning curve. So that's a simple example of why you may or may not be interested. If you have a mobile or Windows mobile device, a cell phone, it'll integrate seamlessly. So the idea is to offer both and have you choose which one you want. On the branding here, that little block will say Cornell. That'll be the extent of our branding Microsoft. Okay, next slide. This is how it's going to work. These are not all the details, but what's expected for existing students is you would go into who I am. You all have some exposure to that tool, I think, right? You'll be able to select what you want to do, which accounts you want to activate, you know, whether to move. You'll have a choice of migrating your mail. We'll migrate your mail for you once and to one account. So I've used Exchange under the covers today. What's really under the covers on today's mail system is Cyrus, the name of what really goes on. So what we'll do is you do the setup,
question. You had one over here? So you had a question?
They told me
become part of the engine.
Yes, of course.
So the part of what we're facing is that folks aren't going to know what this all is until they have it. This is on the back of the staff side. So we are anticipating that once they see it, that they're going to want to have these four folks like ourselves, and that's something that we have to figure out. The other question that we had asked about researchers or folks doing research and whether it is appropriate or not to have that information on vendor accounts. I don't know that I'll ever be able to have a definitive answer that's not wrapped in some legal perspective, but I will say that many faculty now already have Google accounts and use them exclusively because they've been frustrated with CIT for its systems or the famous Sun disk value that was sort of misreported a little bit. So that's something where I think we always have a strong position on what it means, but we can't affect behavior. You know, and if the faculty member wants that or, you know, but I think that the only thing that I can really represent now is that my understanding is that related to the work that you were doing or the grant that you had, there are rules there that you need to follow, obviously, still. But at this moment, I'm really wrapped in the contract issue. I know of no functional reason why you can't have that research information on a Google or Microsoft system.
At this point, I think we're going to have to stop. If there are any further questions, is there some contact information where they can email?
There's someone here, okay.
My son is here, but he's not here anymore. I'm the only men's NC in the directory. I'm GM, I'm 228. That letter recently is by mail. And really, no, I wasn't joking. If you'd like to be on the advisory board, what that would mean is that I sent you a couple emails, and when we're ready to test accounts, we'd like you to not test the service, but test our documentation, how we show you how to migrate, what the state skills look like, and then you can say, either why are you doing it like this, or why don't you do it like that? It would be very helpful for us.
Greg, I think we'd be interested in having someone directly related to GPSA just so that person can come back and give us information.
Yeah.
But please, if you can join me in thanking both Greg and Beth, we appreciate your presentation. At this time, I'm going to, if I can move to extend the meeting by 10 minutes. Can I
second it?
First, second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. If we can have, let me bring up my calendar here. Julia up. Let me bring up your presentation.
So hi, my name is Julia LaSalle, and I'm a second-year student here, and I also work as an LLC in the management center, and I'm a director. And so we just wanted to come here and talk to you a little bit about the programs that we offer at the Cornell Simulation Center and how we can better serve graduate students here on campus. And we're also open to feedback and feedback that you may have about how we can better serve. So to start, I just wanted to sort of talk about my experience as a graduate student here with the Student Leadership Center. Every year the vet student or the vet school has the first year class all go out to work, and we are split up into working groups our first year. Each group gets together out there and does programs within their group. And it really just helps facilitate getting to know each other a little bit more outside the classroom setting and establishing dynamics and how we're going to be working together. And then we bring that, hopefully, those things up more back to the classroom and the school. And then I also, since I enjoy that so much, I'm kind of interested in other education and facilitator as a mentor. So that's sort of how the vet, well,
you want me to go to the back?
Program every semester, Cornell team.
Yes, sir. Any other questions, suggestions? Thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming out. We're close to the end of the meeting, so if I could actually entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Oh, yeah.
Opposed? Abstentions? We're adjourned at 7:09.
Thank you, Mario.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.